I was just going to run through a brief update. I'm sure most of y'all are aware of the Senate Bill 3 process for development of in-stream flows that is going on pretty much statewide right now. Actually, the Brazos is kind of one of the last river basins in the process working through it. This is a, just in case you don't know, they set out a system for protecting environmental flows and to make sure we're not over-appropriating water, over-selling water, and that there is water left in the rivers and streams to support fish, mussels, aquatic life, wildlife in general. Tried to set up a consensus-based approach by each basin involving both a science team and a stakeholder group. The science team is supposed to recommend their flow regime or the amounts of water and the types of pulses they need in the river based solely on the best available science and just evaluating the needs of the environment. No concerns for water use, agriculture, city use, industry. They were not allowed to look at that at all. They have submitted their recommendations to TCEQ and the stakeholder group, which the stakeholders will now take those science team recommendations and balance that with water supply needs and come up with another set of recommendations, which will also be submitted to TCEQ. And they have to do that, I think I have the date in here. I believe they have to submit theirs by the end of September, their recommendations and balances to TCEQ. Then TCEQ will take both documents, go over it, what we've seen so far. Some basins, they've been pretty close to what the stakeholder group recommended. Some of the others, it kind of looks like TCEQ went and made some of their own adjustments to those recommendations before they adopted them into law. So we're not real sure exactly what will happen. I think some of those where TCEQ went off on their own a little bit or didn't follow the stakeholder recommendations, it was because there were some issues with stakeholder reports. One basin, they had a fight and wouldn't make a recommendation, so TCEQ had no choice but to kind of do their own thing on that one. The BBEST, the science team members, I was one of them. Jack Davis, who some of y'all know, he's our field operations manager in water quality, did it. We had Tom Gooch, he's a hydrologist. Kirk Weinmiller and Tim Bonner are PhD professors at A&M and Texas State who specialize in fisheries. Both of them have done extensive work in the Brazos. That was great for us to have. They had such good knowledge. We had a real benefit and a starting spot that a lot of the other basins didn't have because we have had a lot of work in the basin. David Dunn is a hydrologist and geomorphologist. Dan Geis, environmental scientist. George Gian was an estuary biologist from University of Houston, and Phil Price is a hydrologist here with the BRA also. What we had to do was go through, and the state has already recommended a flow regime paradigm so that we can kind of regulate environmental flows, make sure the overriding fear is that there's different pulses, different fish will need to spawn. It'll cue them to go spawn or cue them to migrate in a different place, and given reservoir development, water withdrawals from the system, that over time we may have minimized or changed those schemes and be having an impact or to prevent us from doing that going forward in the future. Have to represent in the recommendations the entire range of flow, so that goes from droughts to floods. And then the five critical components of what we had is the magnitude that you should have a certain rate of flow, the frequency which it should occur, how long should that last, especially on the pulses where you get a high flow, how long, how many days does that need to maintain, timing, and the rate of change, what would qualify. We picked on the BBEST approximately, we started out with 20 sites on the Brazos, and TCEQ kind of threw us for a little loop when they came back and said, oh yeah, y'all have to do the San Bernard too. But I think it was one of those that kind of got lost in the legislative shuffle, so we added one site in the San Bernard too. These are all these sites are correlated with USGS gauges that had long-term historical data, and we tried to get overall at least one site per major river segment, if not two, depending on the size of the segment, or other breaks, major inflows, things like that. Some of the things we had to go through and look and analyze is our recommendations have to be seasonal. So the pulse flow you recommend for the spring may be different than what you recommend for the summer or winter. So at the end of the day, we looked at a bazillion different things, including hydrology, what has happened historically and when, water quality, was there any impacts on dissolved oxygen, significant changes, water temperature, riparian growth. We looked at growing seasons for certain riparian trees that we know need water to disperse seeds or water at that time of year so that the new seedlings can have enough to grow. Spawning seasons where they were known for different fish. I do want to say that there is overall a huge lack of actual real hard knowledge on exactly what fish or mussels need as far as what flows, that sort of thing. There's no research document we could go to. It'd be super easy if it wasn't say catfish need 3,600 CFS in May to spawn and they'll be fine if they get that. We didn't have that. So we're trying to use all this sort of stuff to make our decisions. What we came up with is statistically three flows or three seasons overall that we would make recommendations for. Spring was March through June, summer, July through October, and winter November through December. Actually, if we just went on straight statistics, we probably could have gotten away with two. Hot, not hot is the way it broke out. But considering adding in some of the riparian needs and things like that, we ended up recommending three. One of the other things we had to recommend is a determinant of hydrologic condition so that the flows will be different during years of drought versus wet years as far as what's recommended and what's expected to be passed. We chose to use the Palmer Hydrologic Drought Index, which you just heard a little bit about. This is a good index. We tried to take out any sort of human influence in making that determination. Sometimes things can be deceptive if someone's pulling a lot of water out of the system. If just based it on flow or something, may not look. So we tried to use the Palmer Hydrologic. We broke that into different zones. Where actually, NOAA has the state broken into different zones. So there's one for each zone. And then basically dry, and this is standard guidance from this state science committee that kind of wrote the guidelines on how the science teams are to work. And take the historical record of all the flow for the site. Below the 25th percentile is dry. Above it, the 17th would be wet based on those conditions. So you kind of had to break it out historically by what the conditions were, then determine what those levels were. And these are the kind of the climatological divisions that affect the state. So
fairly shed up there.
North Central Texas covers most of the Upper Basin, Leon, North Bosque, big chunk of the land passes. East Texas gets some of the Navasota site, some of those other South Central, the Upper Coast will get the Lower Basin sites. General recommendations, I didn't want to put you all to sleep by showing 20 individual recommendations by site, so I just kind of summarized the overall of what it will look like. Subsistence flow is a flow we had to recommend. That is the minimum amount of water in a system just to keep things alive. Doesn't support reproduction, doesn't support growth, they just don't die. And that would be like what we saw last summer in a lot of basins. Use the fifth percentile of the historic flows by site. We did set now in the upper basin, there are several streams where it was normal for it to go to zero. They go dry, routinely drought, no drought. And so their 95th percentile was sometimes zero or 0.1. Any of those where it was less than one, we rounded up to one. It's a little conservative, probably not going to be attainable in some of those upper basin sites, but those are really problematic anyway because there's not anything to really regulate the flows up there or where you could influence that in any way. These will apply during drought. We did write an implementation, or we have recommended to the stakeholders group an implementation rule that will hopefully prevent humans from pulling it down more frequent than what has occurred historically.
basically it's kind of the, we've called it the 50% rule. If you're between your base flow for a season and subsistence, you can only divert 50% of the difference to try to prevent people from pulling it down intentionally. Now, all this goes without saying, these are the best intentions of man, and nature may do something we have no control, and that may not be something that's possible. But the attention, the base flows, you know, there's a dry, average, wet recommendation for each one by season. Those we kind of went through. So there's three different ones depending on where your hydrologic condition is, what you'd have to beat each season. For high flow pulses, we looked at 8 different levels of high flow or overbank flows. Not all sites got 8. It was based site by site on the recommendations. Not all sites had overbank flows. Now, one thing to keep in mind, I've not seen anything in the legislation, TCEQ, or anyone else is suggesting that we try to create an overbank flow. That's one of those things. If we get the rain and it happens, it happens. But no one's going to be expected to let water out of a reservoir. And really, we can't duplicate a natural overbank flow anyway. Because even letting them out of a reservoir is a slow rise. You don't get the sediment movement, some of the muscle bed movement that you would need with a flood type event. So we looked at all these, but the number of peaks or high flow pulses per site does vary. Sometimes the 1 per season and the 2 per season weren't significantly different, so we just picked one and moved on because there wasn't a significant difference. Most of the sites, a lot of areas, the overbanks didn't appear to be that significant. Our riparian, some of like the Sabine in East Texas, it's much more significant. They have a lot of very riparian-specific trees. Our riparian vegetation, the Brazos, not that significantly different from upland vegetation in most places. So having some of those overbank flows, as long as we were getting some bank full flows, wasn't as critical. It was judged in our basin. The other thing we deal with a lot is most of our riparian has already been destroyed. There wasn't a whole lot of native untouched riparian that we could find. Just a few other notes on the high flow and overbanks. We did try to make sure we protected lateral connectivity with the banks so that we would get some water transference into the sediments on the banks and help support the plants, the types of plants we have. That seemed to be more important than having an actual flood. It's that their roots are getting good water. And then for the lower basin, Oxbow Lakes, which we have quite a few of, are excellent nurseries for fish. And a whole lot of the diversity of fish populations from Waco South is dependent on reproduction in those oxbows. So trying to make sure that we still maintain some connectivity with them. And it was another case, the way they're formed and the valleys are somewhat shallow, we did not necessarily need overbanks or floods to have that connectivity. We just need the water to get high, create the little pathway for the fish to swim back and forth, and we made sure that for our lower basin sites that those are recommended. Estuary findings. We probably had it easier than the others in this regard. We don't have the Big Bay estuary systems in either Brazos or the San Bernard. It's kind of a longitudinal. There's just a gradient as the river hits the Gulf. So that made it easy on us because some of those reports, if you read the Guadalupe and what they've got to do for their estuary, it's just a nightmare to do. But
well, you can't control anything on the San Bernard, can you?
No.
There's no dam above it, so.
No, you can't, and there's not really a river authority overriding it. There's not a lot of development there. I mean, Houston slowly
fishing, though, I'll
inching that way. But yeah, the San Bernard, we made a recommendation because we had to, but I don't know that there's a lot to do. TCEQ will probably adopt a rule for it, and it'll affect some permits, but they don't even have that many water users or water rights that we could find in that area. It's still pretty rural, beautiful, and somewhat untouched, but there's certainly there not a lot, you're right, we can do about the San Bernard. But some of the beneficial functions and things we do try. try to protect with sediment supplies. That's one of the key transports that rivers do to estuaries, varying the salinity regimes, which if we had a big bay would be highly important for seagrasses, shrimp, things like that, and nutrient loading. We tested our environmental flows in the river. Because the Brazos has no significant bay, there was a big giant hole of no data to work with on the little bit of estuary, and worked under George Gian, recommended that if we maintain our flow regime in the river for the health of the river, that that would also support just a little longitudinal estuary we have and keep it healthy. So we didn't make any estuary-specific recommendations. Geomorphology findings. We did do some site-specific studies at Seymour and Richmond. Again, like happens so often, this was a legislative mandate with inadequate funds. So that was all the money we had, or that's all we could afford to do, was two sites, so we hit an upper basin and a lower basin. What I discovered, we are still experiencing modest geomorphic channels are still going deeper in some places. They're also going a little bit wider from what our David Dunn, our geomorphologist, said. We're still seeing impacts, though, that it's really hard. We're still seeing impacts in the channel of things that happened 100 years ago, that those changes are so slow that it's really hard to make a lot of recommendation other than he did run our recommended flows through, and he thought that those would be adequate to continue to move sediment. There was maybe a little bit of loss over historic undammed type values, but not a significant amount that would cause damage to the environment or to the biota out there. And so so we're kind of in stage one, and between one and four, depending on where you are. We're going down, and we're getting a little wider, and you're seeing some slumping, and you can see that's evidence, and that's a prime example of why you shouldn't clear all the way to the river, but that happens a lot along the Brazos. And then we did make some research priorities going forward. Again, will there be funding to actually do this sort of stuff? Who knows? But more hydrology work as far as where the water's going and some of that geomorphology, how is it moving the sediments? Water quality, we're going to continue to do anyway. Water quality was the one spot, because of CRP, we had an abundance of data to work with. That was the one spot we didn't sit there and go, gee, we wish we knew more. A whole lot on the aquatic fauna and what their reproductive needs are, what triggers. They don't, you know, a lot of the fisheries biologists said, we don't know if it's a flow trigger, a length of sunlight trigger, a water temperature trigger, some of those things that are spurring reproduction, or is it a combination of factors? They have to get riparian vegetation monitoring. We're trying to start a little of that at BRA for some other projects, but it will, we'll be able to contribute that data for the next time. Estuary monitoring and some issues for adaptive management. This does have a process that within 10 years, science team gets reconvened, stakeholders group gets reconvened, look, sees how well have the flows been, has this been working? Do we need to adjust it, or has there been some key new piece of information that would spawn us to make an adjustment to the recommendations, or do we think it's going good? Those groups do have to come back sometime within 10 years and look at it again and say, yeah, we think we got it as good as it can get, or no, there's some new stuff and we're going to adjust this way. And the BBES report is out on the internet. God-awful link on the planet. So you might just go to TCEQ's website and type in Brazos BBES, or they do have an in-stream flow page and you can navigate to it from there.
I can't type that well.
I cut and paste. And I don't know, I guess if someone wants it, I can go print a few of them out or something, but yeah, you still have to type it in.
How big is it?
It's, the report itself is 8 chapters, about yay thick, and then it has a CD with it with an appendix of just reams and reams of our analysis and the different things that we did.
Could you just email that link to the distribution?
Yeah. Yes. Jenna can do that, yeah, because I've got some links in some of mine for the later day. We'll just send them all out to everyone.
And we will have these presentations up on the website. We'll have the CRP too.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am?
You mentioned the minimum flow, so systems flow, and then part of the basin was 1 CFS. Do you remember what it was at the bottom end of the basin?
I can look real quick. It was significantly larger, and like the Clear Fork, the Double Mountain, the Salt, and I think the Brazos at Seymour, actually, if just going on the statistical, it was less than one, but we just rounded it up. Richmond gauge, the subsistence flow 550 cubic feet per second.
Thank you.
And I've got all the others. If someone wants to see a specific site, I can show them the actual numbers for the flow regime. Or you can go read the lovely.
The sites that you have, about 20 of them in this basin. Were you saying, are those based on segments, or were they kind of just where the USGS gauge were, and you kind of said these were a good representation of these sections? Is that right?
That's pretty much what we did. We took, there's actually 60-something USGS gauges across the Great Brazos Basin, and we took kind of a combination of where do we have water quality data in the vicinity, a good long duration for historical record. If it was one that was 20 years old, we didn't really look at that. Most of the ones we looked at had 50 plus years of flow data from them. And then tried to make sure we had kind of every major area. It wasn't specifically based on water quality segments as for what's in the water quality standards, but had a pretty good, make sure every of the major basins are in there, and like the Little River's pretty big system. It's got a couple sites from Waco to PK. There's two or three sites in there, because that's a pretty long segment. Same thing for the lower basin. So it wasn't just solely on segments. But the key thing to keep in mind, too, is that was just our recommendation. Stakeholders group could go back and go, 20 is way too much. There's no way we can track that. There's no way we can account for all that water. We want to do 10. Or we want to do 8 of them. I don't know what they'll do with that. Or they may go back and take our flow regime and say, you did 8 pulses on this site, and we think that's insane. We're going to recommend 4. So they can change the recommendations. Right? They're basically going to write their own set of recommendations also, and then send that forward to TCEQ, then put 4 folks in. Yeah, it's at the stakeholders. Ours is turned in, ours is done, it's gone to the stakeholders. They've got to try to take the environmental needs now and balance it with water supply needs. And I'm real glad I was on the science team and not the stakeholders group. They have the much harder job.
How long does that take?
For us, we had a year. They've been going about a year too, but realistically, our report wasn't due to March 1st, and they've got to have theirs by September 31st, so they get about not quite 6 full months.
The stakeholders group is just now getting moving.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things, science team was given funding. Stakeholders group is still trying to get their funding together for this as well, because they're having to come back to industry and all and ask for donations from people.
And it's
so.
Yeah, and the funding we were given wasn't near what was needed, and they got even less.
And they got none.
Yeah.
We took it off.
Y'all didn't get enough, and they got none.
Yeah.
reason I know that.
I got a phone call. We had already talked about it.